Canadian Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Steve Reeves, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. This is a new guest we have on the show. Well, if you listen to the Fat Guys Network feed, and you listen to Fat Guys at the Movies second reel, you've heard Steve before. This is the first time he's showing up on Fat Guys at the Movies proper, as we like to say it, yeah. In the magical studio in the sky. It sounds so proper when it really isn't. But it's good to have Steve or Gabe, who he's called in a couple of times and left some messages before. But it's good to have him on the show. We'll talk to him in a second. I just want to get through the paperwork, and then we'll kind of talk to Steve and find out where he's from so everybody can track him down and stalk him on the internet and all that good stuff. But if you want to stalk us on the internet, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and listen to the show. We also have a bunch of other stuff on there. We have other podcasts. We have some DVD reviews and Blu-ray reviews and that sort of thing. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network, and we pop right up. Subscribe to us. Download us at your convenience. You can go to Fat Guys page on Facebook, which is facebook.com/FGATM. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. We do have an email that we want to read in the third segment. But before that, let's talk to Steve. Steve, tell us who you are. Well, I know who you are, but tell the audience who you are, what you do. You have a website and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I just got it pretty much started up a couple months ago. It's called thesar3000.com or thesar3000.com. And it's just, I'm an amateur movie critic. I like to do it on the side. Try to see as many movies as I can, but usually it's only about one new movie a weekend. And then throughout the week, I watch older movies. I've been doing this since college, which is sadly about 20 years ago.
Oh, we don't want to tell everybody how old you are. We want everyone to think we're all youthful and young and pretty and adorable in the magical studio in the sky.
20 months ago. I didn't even go weeks there. But yeah, I've been doing it for a very long time, but it's just a hobby. I actually have a full-time job, so I only maybe watch maybe 6 movies a week, but I try to review every one of them.
That's a lot, but you've done, how many reviews have you had? Because you used to have another site that you've migrated over to your new one, but you have quite a few actual reviews up there, don't you?
Yeah, thank you. I had a previous site, yes, it was a WordPress, and it kept breaking down, and Facebook never recognized it, so I wanted to get my own site and design Facebook. It myself, and I did from scratch. I have, I'm on my 820th review right now.
Wow.
Uploaded, unfortunately, is only about 200 some. I still have them on my computer and everything, but it takes approximately 2 hours a piece to develop the page, because it's from scratch. So everything I do from scratch, it takes about 2 hours per review.
That's what a lot of people who aren't, you know, there's a little bit of inside baseball here for the movie review world. Publishing a movie review is not just as simple as just typing, you know, copy and pasting and hit publish. You have to find artwork, and you have to, you know, build any graphics that you're going to have, or you have to format in a certain way. And depending on how you have it set up, it can be relatively quick, but it's never just a copy paste thing.
Oh, that's very true. My goodness, it takes a long time. I've been cheating. I've been combining onto one page, a lot of the reviews, like 11, Friday the 13th movies, my reviews.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, it's not like you're being like, let's have, you know, we have Lion and the Witch in the Wardrobe and Last House on the Left, and we just kind of put those together in the same page. Because no, they both start with an fun. L.
That'd be a great crossover.
the last Lion and Witch in the Wardrobe on the left.
I just hate to see what happened to the lion in that house.
I wonder who ends up on top with that one.
No, the lion's going to live, but he's not going to come out very pretty.
No, he's going to be damaged for life. We're getting in a bad territory here. anyways, yeah, go check out. It's thesar3000.com. And you have all your reviews. You did all the Harry Potters. You're doing runs of things. You did all the Harry Potter movies not too long ago.
Yeah, and I immediately followed that up with Mad Max. I've never seen the Mad Max movies, so I watched three of those.
Yeah.
Following that, yeah.
And then there's also, I think I saw you say somewhere that you were going to do the James Bond thing. I'm going to watch all the James Bond movies in a marathon with my son this summer. I literally figured it out. It's going to take 4 days. It's going to take 4 days to watch every single James Bond movie.
Was it a 22,
23? I believe they're 22. There's 22. They're making the 23rd now. But yeah, 22. And I figure, I mean, we can watch them straight, but I'm not going to make that. So I figured, okay, well, we'll take so many hours per day. And I figured it out that it's going to take us basically 4 days. So we have to block off 4 days for this. But it'll be fun. It'll be a bonding experience.
Yeah, you gave me the idea. Thank you. I'm going to do the same thing for when the new James Bond finally comes out this winter. And I'm really excited about that. So I want to watch all of them. I've only seen maybe seven of all of them.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting to watch. It's a brand new perspective to watch every single one in succession. I did it once back when Die Another Day came out, I think was when it was. I watched all of them. It took me several weeks, but I made the point of watching all of them relatively in chronological order. And it's interesting because you really see the progression, you see the change, and you see sort of how things evolve throughout the series. So it's neat to do that. So I hope you
look forward
to
it.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of movies to look forward to, let's do our first review, which is for Piranha 3DD. And this one, it's only opening in 75 theaters, but you can also get it on demand starting. Well, now, if you're listening to the show, it's available now. And this one, you've got more breasts and more blood in the revitalized killer fish franchise.
It was not a piranha. We think they're back.
These piranha spent eons in underground lakes and rivers. So fish can become confused and try to enter man-made drainage systems.
Ow!
I didn't.
Whatever it is, I don't like it.
Let's all get wet and wild!
We got about a minute and a half for this, so real quick, neither of us have seen this because they didn't screen it for anybody except for like the cast, but are you looking forward to this one?
Absolutely. I love the first one. I can't wait to see this one. I know it's probably going to be bad, but I definitely want to see it. And the preview itself, just as silly as it looks, I'm definitely on board for this one.
Yeah, I thought the first one was a lot of fun. It was totally over the top, so totally ridiculous. And I mean, it was brutal and gross and violent and gory, but I had a blast watching it. And I actually thought for the time, just a couple of years ago, the 3D, while it was a post conversion, I thought they took some time with it. There's still plenty of artifacting going on. But the conversion of that first one was at least enjoyable and fun.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, the first one was directed by Alexandre Aja, I think is how you say his name. And I like his stuff, and he does some pretty extreme stuff. This one's directed by John Galuger, who is Clu Galuger's son, but I'm not a real fan of his stuff. I did not like Feast. Did you like Feast?
I haven't seen it.
Okay. He does that over-the-top bloody horror, but I'm hoping it's better than Feast. That's my big thing is I just hope it's better than Feast. But hey, you know, it's going to have naked ladies in it, and I am a big fan of naked ladies. So that's my thing. Anyways, it does get a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us and didn't make it available. But when we come back, we got to go to break right now, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about Snowbella and the Four. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We're just talking about Piranha 3DD, which is what we were looking for. It's only been 2 years since the last one. Did you realize that?
Yeah, but actually, I thought they were going to release the Piranha 3DD like almost instantly, like within 6 or 7 months, like they used to do with the Friday 13th movies. But
yeah,
but I guess it kept getting pushed back. It was supposed to come out last winter.
Then you know, here's the thing, and I've learned this with the Weinstein companies. For as much as everyone is like, oh, the Weinsteins, they're brilliant, and they won what the Weinsteins are brilliant at doing, and Harvey is really brilliant at doing, is picking one or two movies and championing those and being a bulldog for those movies. Mm-hmm. And everything else he poops on. Okay. Because look, I mean, The Artist, I mean, he took that from a completely obscure movie and they won the freaking Academy Award. Awards. They won several of them. Nobody wants to see the movie except for the critics and, you know, the art house fan. I mean, people are getting mad at the movie. People are getting mad at the movie and demanding their money back because there was no talking in it.
Really?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
No. Are they dumb? You hadn't heard that? Daft?
Well, there are people who there were stories of them demanding their money back when they went and saw it and realized that it was a silent film, which is stupid anyways. I mean, like, just pay your money. It's not this theater's fault. I mean, seriously. But no, they, you know, they'll take a movie, King's Speech, same thing, a relatively obscure movie, and they pushed it and pushed it and pushed it, and he knew how to handle the thing. But all these other releases they have, Spy Kids, you know, that time travel Spy Kids movie?
Yeah.
They didn't push that. And that thing died an obscure death. And, like, thankfully, this year, he was pushing Bully, and he has made over $3 million, which is fantastic for a documentary, for a mediocre documentary, for what it was. And so pretty much the Weinstein is ignore a movie if it's not going to be the award winner.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that also Chicago?
Chicago, they pushed. Yeah, that was theirs. They did that, and I like Chicago.
Good Will Hunting.
Good Will Hunting was another one. Yeah, he knows how to do that. But back when I was doing filmmaking back in the early 2000s, everyone was like, "Oh, if you could just get something picked up by Miramax," and I realized that was a terrible thing to have happen to somebody because they buried most of the movies they bought or were so completely incompetent in releasing them. I've told this story before on the show, but it's been a while, so I'll repeat it again. There was a movie called Alex Rider Stormbreaker that came out, 2003, 2004. And I remember I did an interview with the author of the original book, which is basically a spy book for kids. I did the interview with the author for the original book when they were prepping it in development, and I published it, you know, and I kept asking the rep, I'm like, when is this coming out? Because I kind of want to see it. And she didn't know. And then I went to go see Saw. It was one of the Saw movies at midnight for Halloween. And as I'm walking down the theater, all of a sudden I see him like, oh, hey, look. Stormbreaker's playing in that theater. When I got back, I emailed the rep and I'm like, did you know it opened in Cleveland? She's like, I just found out. And I'm like, that is how the Weinsteins releasing. And that's what they did with Piranha. They were like, oh yeah, we're going to fast track this. We're going to do 3DD because we're going to be making jokes about breasts, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it just never showed up. And then they were going to go direct a video and then they were going to get a release and then they're going to do 200 screens and now they're 75 screens and they're doing on demand. They don't know what the heck they're doing.
That's right. What about the whole Boondock Saints storyline? The
second one?
Well, no, the first one. The first one. I mean, did you see the documentary about Troy?
No, I didn't.
Oh, fantastic.
But I know they kind of botched that one too, didn't they?
Troy
Duffy, yeah.
Yeah, they kind of gave both sides, but they really made Troy look like a real ass. Bad person.
We may need to bleep that out.
That's okay. Sorry. Well, you know, I was just talking about the donkey again.
That's okay.
They made him look really bad, but also the Weinsteins also look really bad too.
Yeah, the Weinsteins, they know how to do certain things, but they neglect. I don't think they're incompetent, but I think they neglect in a big way. So. Anyways, that's about it on Piranha 3DD. Let's talk about Snow White and the Huntsman. And this one, it's pretty much the same thing as Mirror Mirror, only fewer jokes and fewer Scarface references.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who is fairest of them all?
You are the fairest, but there is another destined to surpass you. Consume her heart and you shall live forever.
Find me someone who doesn't fear the dark forest to hunt her down.
First of all, did you see Mirror Mirror?
No, I have not.
Okay, you're not missing much. It's not that good of a movie.
Yeah, I actually took your recommendation not to see it.
What's funny about this, these two films, and they're both these Snow White stories, vastly different, but they're both kind of have these weird, similar qualities. Both of them are gorgeous looking movies. I mean, I take issue with a lot of things in Mirror Mirror, and I'm going to take issues with some things with Snow White and the Huntsman. The production design is not one of them. The costuming is not one of them. I think both these movies look incredible.
Okay.
But.
Well, this is my first time hearing your take on this, so I'd like to hear what you have to say about it.
Well, the Snow White and the Huntsman, the problem is the trailer's awesome, by the way. It's intense, it's just cool, and all this stuff's happening. The movie, I think the biggest problem with the movie is it's directed by a first-time director. And if you've seen enough of first-time directors' work, you realize they don't know when to edit, and they don't know when to pull it back, and they try and let the movie breathe too much, and this thing hyperventilates. It's a 2-hour and 7-minute movie, and it should be 90 minutes.
Really?
You know, they have these long, drawn-out scenes. They have scenes where they have long, deep pauses between their lines. It's deadly serious. I mean, just everything. So, and you can hear it in the trailer where, you know, Charlize Theron's like, "Mira, Mira, who's the fairest of them all?" And I'm like, this is not Shakespeare. And then you got the whole thing that you got Kristen Stewart. In no universe is Kristen Stewart more attractive than Charlize Theron.
No, I completely agree.
I mean, like the scene where she's like, and the mirror says to her, she's like, "Well, there's this new one, Snow White." And I expect her to be like, "Really? With that nose and those teeth and those sunken eyes and giant Will Smith ears?" She doesn't say that, but she really should. I mean, Kristen Stewart, she tries to do an accent in this movie.
So she tries to act, finally.
Yeah. I mean, what's funny about Kristen Stewart is she was actually a very promising young actress, or actor, you know, be respectful, you know. But then she did Twilight, and suddenly she's like, "Well, I don't have to, this is what I guess I do, because I guess Twilight's awesome." And she brings her Twilight game to this film. She does better than the Twilight movies. Oh. But still, she tries to do an accent, and she's sort of like Kevin Costner in Robin Hood.
So for 15 minutes.
Yeah. So, I mean, because at one point I lean over to the friend of mine who was I was sitting with in the movie, and I'm like, is she doing an accent, or is she just like, it's one of those things where you're like, is she doing an actual accent, or is she doing sort of like those, the sort of the Renaissance Festival accents? You know, the thing where they like sort of like they talk esoterically, but they aren't actually speaking in a British accent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they cut a lot of the stuff out in the middle and they tightened it up, it would have been just freaking awesome. I mean, if they would just nonstop action, it would have been awesome. But they just they breathe too much, and there's too much. And Kristen Stewart's terrible. I mean, Charlize Theron's okay. She's good. And Chris Hemsworth, I almost said Liam Hemsworth. But Chris Hemsworth, yeah, Thor, the guy who plays Thor, he's actually really good. And he actually can do an accent. And, you know, he works in the role. And even the elves, the dwarves, they take actual real actors and in the computer shrink them down, because they got like Nick Frost and Ian McShane and Bob Hoskins playing the dwarves. But the dwarves are kind of lame. They just kind of show up and.
Okay, was it the same thing as like Lord of the Rings, where they made him smaller?
Yeah, they just sort of use force perspective and camera tricks and sometimes computer generated shrinkage. But yeah, I mean, Kristen Stewart she has this big. There's supposed to be this speech at the end where she's big rousing speech, and it's an overwritten speech, and I mean, it's laughable dialogue, and she doesn't deliver it right. And like, even when she's like the scene where she's like all dressed up in the armor, because you see in the trailer, she's riding the horse on the beach to the castle. She's sort of like cowering behind. I mean, she doesn't look heroic at any point. She does not, like, because, you know, like when Superman's flying to save Metropolis or whatever, his chest is out and he's there, and, you know, bird poop's flying in his face. It doesn't matter. He's just flying and he's just doing it. And she's kind of cowering behind her shoulder. It's
Well, she was one of the reasons why I didn't want to see it. Once I saw the preview, everything looked great, and then she showed up, and I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, pretty much any scene with her not in it is pretty cool.
Okay, was it better than Battleship?
I'll answer that after the break.
Okay.
Tony 32 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment where Steve can finally swear, even though we got a taste of that.
Well, it was ass. I mean, come on.
I said ass.
I was talking about a donkey.
An ass rape rim job, I think was what you said.
I was talking about a donkey lady, okay? Donkey.
That's all you. That's you. You and your donkey lady. Which is slightly different from Don Quixote. But you were asking me, was Snow White better than Battleship?
Yeah, which one would you recommend me seeing? Because I've seen neither yet, of course.
Well, here's the thing. Battleship's not a good movie. Don't get me wrong. Battleship's a shitty movie. But if all you want to see is giant ships blowing shit up, Battleship has those moments. It has moments where that's not happening. You know,
like the first
and it's got
minutes.
Rihanna. Yeah, it's got Rihanna like barking, slurring dialogue through the whole movie.
I saw the story on that.
Did you see that? It was 318 words. She uttered 318 words in that movie. Most reviews of that movie were longer than her sum total of her dialogue. So, yeah, I mean, Battleship's not. But see, that's the thing. If that's what you want, if you just want the big, just really rock stupid summer movie, that if you love sort of medieval fantasy, like if you want to see something like Elizabeth, the Queen Elizabeth movie with Cate Blanchett meets the Lord of the Rings, yeah, or Clash of the Titans, then yeah, you're gonna want to see Snow White more. It just kind of depends on what you want. They're kind of on equal footing in my opinion. Snow White's smarter; it's way smarter. But then again, I took a crap this morning that was smarter than Battleship.
Well, yeah. Actually, neither genre is my forte. I don't really like the medieval type stuff. I had to force myself to watch the Harry Potter movies. Not medieval. That's not really medieval, but like wizardy. Or magic or swords.
You ended up liking the Harry Potter once you got settled.
Oh, I enjoy the ride, and I also seen all Lord of the Ring movies, but I actually waited many months after it was released before I actually saw it. Like it came out in December of I believe 2001. Or,
the first one, yeah.
And it took me until April or May before I actually finally went to go see Lord of the Rings after everybody said it was the best movie ever made. And
yeah.
It's not really my type of movie, but I actually enjoyed it. I just don't ever want to see it again. And the same thing with the big.
It was a great movie. It was wonderful, awesome. I don't ever want to see it again. Somebody described Gone with the Wind to me that way. Because I had to watch that again because I'm in Blu-ray Elite, which is a thing where Warner Brothers sends you Blu-rays so you can watch and tweet about. And one of them they sent me was Gone with the Wind, which, you know, you get these packages, you're like, oh, this is kind of cool. Look at these Blu-rays. And, oh, shit, this is a four-hour movie.
Did you watch it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a soap opera.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
I watched it as a kid.
It looks, yeah, it's a beautiful movie. I mean, in terms of, it is better shot and better composed than, you know, from 73 years ago than a lot of movies. It was than Battleship.
Well, I was going to say, actually, going back to Battleship, I don't like that type of movie either. I actually hate CGI. I really, really hate CGI and big robots and big machines.
Wait. Do you hate all CGI or just hate the obvious CGI?
I hate, of course I hate obvious CGI. Like Lord of the Rings used CGI and King Kong did too, and I thought they were both very well done. As long as it takes a back door to the story, as long as it's in the background, as long as it's like, you know, King Kong's not really there, it's CGI, but that's not what we're concentrating on.
In a movie, if it's not, hey, let's look at the awesome CGI.
Yeah, it's not like, here's a big ship coming out of the water and attacking the city. That's more of the foreground. I don't like that. I'm more of if it's necessary, like the Hulk in Avengers, if it's necessary, then yes, I don't mind it. But if it's in the forefront, like Transformers, I don't really care to see it at all. And the louder the more put off I am. The previews for Battleship actually really made me laugh, and I laughed harder and harder as the preview progressed.
Well, here's the difference. I'll tell you, here's the difference between Battleship versus Snow White. You watch the trailers for Battleship, that's exactly what you get.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you, if you saw the trailer for Battleship and then you went and saw Battleship and be like, well, that was nothing like the trailer. I don't know what freaking trailer you watched. Snow White and the Huntsman, although all the scenes are there, the trailer has an energy and a movement to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That is only, I would say, is present only about half the time in the actual film.
So. Well, you got me. We discussed this off the air, but the pacing is another one of my big pet peeves in movies is pacing. Yeah. And if a movie's not paced very good, then I'm not going to have a good time. If it's really drawn out, like you mentioned, Meet Joe Black, if it's really, really, really drawn out,
yeah,
I really have a problem with that. I don't need something happening all the time on the screen, but move it along. Alfred Hitchcock was perfect at that. His movies were not necessarily fast-paced, but he always had something going on. Dialogue, looks, mood, atmosphere. Well,
the movie No Country for Old Men, I loved. I thought it was a fantastic film.
It was.
And it's a very deliberately paced film. And it's not fast-moving. But it works for what it is. And I didn't think that they were just drawing it out and unnecessarily making it long. Whereas like Snow White, it just felt like the director was like, oh, she's angry, and I just wanna feel that there for a second. Just give me a second. And that's what you get through most of the film.
That sounds a little more like a adult movie than a Disney classic turned into a live
I wouldn't mind watching Charlize Theron in an adult version of Snow White.
Watch her in Monster then.
Well, I don't know about that.
Wasn't she like a walker, a street walker?
Well, seriously, she was like a very realistic version of a street walking prostitute. You know,
all look like Julia Roberts, like in Mirror Mirror.
Yeah, if only they looked like Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. Prostitutes don't look like that. Take a drive through the bad end of town sometime, and like when they're ugly, when they're nasty looking from like three blocks away, you know they're just hideous up close. But no, that's all hookers aside.
Well, okay, yeah, I kind of compared them, and it was unfair to compare them because they're completely separate movies. The reason why I actually brought it up in the first place is because I haven't seen either, and I'm not really on board for either, and that's why I kind of asked. You know, if you had a choice between seeing the two, which one would you see? And you're right about the preview for Battleship, but I did laugh all the way through that preview, and people were looking at me in the theater. What are you laughing at? It's just because it looks so ridiculous to me, and it got more and progressively ridiculous. And then when Metroid showed up on the screen and was walking down the steps, I lost it. And some people are saying, not Metroid, they're saying a little more current. Halo?
Yeah.
More current video game. But I saw Metroid as a kid.
I was waiting for the Kia Hamsters to pull up. And do a little party rock anthem going.
Yeah. And it just looked so incredibly ridiculous, the movie. So I didn't even bother seeing it. But I'm not prejudging it. If I saw it on video, which I might, to review it, I would go into it with an absolute open mind. I do.
Yeah.
Every movie, including the Twilight movies.
You have to approach every movie with an open mind, and I think that's a good idea. Now that your mind may slam shut 5 minutes into it, and with good reason, but you know, going with an open mind. Let's talk a little bit about box office. Okay. Oh, by the way, Snow White and the Huntsman gets a kind of sucks from me. I wanted to like it. I love the production design is so gorgeous, and the scenery is beautiful. But it's just chewed through by the entire cast chews the scenery through the entire film. So kind of sucks. Anyways, let's talk box office from this last weekend. Were you surprised at the performance of Men in Black 3?
I didn't think it's going to make that much money. It got some bad buzz, and the insider information about the script problems and how long it took, and it reminded me a lot of Rush Hour 3. But I actually enjoyed it, and I'm not too upset that it made the $55 million, and it's not looking like a bomb overseas, so it's going to make its money back.
Well, we don't know about that because it was an expensive. I'm hearing upward of $300 million for the budget.
Oh, so it's still, where?
Yeah.
Was that a real rocket? Oh, spoiler.
What? Spoiler.
Was that a real rocket?
Well, because apparently they had to shut down production and do rewrites, was what I had heard. So that's why it was. That's extremely expensive. It's a lot less expensive to just do another rewrite in the script stage. But they had to change things during production, and that's always rough. I don't know. See, I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I don't necessarily think this even has anything to do with Will Smith. I think it's just the franchise is old.
Well, it is, but I kind of felt it was a makeup movie, like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. It was a makeup movie. I love the fact that they just completely ignored part two even existed. It just kind of, they only mentioned a few scenes that were in the first one, things that happened in the first one. And if they ended it right here, I'd be totally fine with it. I had fun. I only give it 3.5 out of 5 stars, or in your case, kind of rocks.
Yeah.
So I didn't necessarily, I thought there were script problems. It got really silly toward the beginning. In the beginning, once it got its footing, I mean, James Brolin was amazing. There's not one scene of him that I didn't think that was a young Tommy Lee Jones. Like, I was watching an older movie. In fact, when he came on screen, I automatically, my mind just said it was Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah. Well, I thought he was great. I wish there would have been more of him in it. I think Will Smith kind of hogged the spotlight, which is his thing now, because he's so big. He's such a huge name that and he produces everything. Mm-hmm. So that's a dangerous combination. The thing is, though, you mentioned, you know, it did as well. I don't know what sort of spell Will Smith has put on people, but everyone's giving him the benefit of the doubt on everything. And they're like, oh no, it's solid debut. And I'm like, no, this was kind of a soft debut. People were predicting 90 million for the 4-day spread, and it was just under 70 million.
Oh no, I agree with you, by the way. I agree with you on the, and Memorial Day weekend, it should have been bigger, and they shouldn't even put MIB3 on Memorial Day weekend. Something else should have been in there. Hell, even a Battleship would have seen more of a Memorial Day weekend type movie with a tie-in with the military. But not MIB3. I mean, if MIB3 came out, like, I don't know, 4 years ago, or almost 2 years after the second one, it would be more relevant, and it would have been a bigger movie. But you're right, and I agree with you, just because of the Memorial Day weekend. And
Well, it basically made its 3-day spread, which is just under 55. It basically made about what the first one and the second one made. But you're talking 10 to 15 years inflation, plus this one had a 3D ticket bump. This was not even on par with those. And for all intents and purposes, it was the only movie opening. Chernobyl Diaries opened, but it opened extremely soft. Which is what's funny with that one is, on one hand, I liked Chernobyl Diaries. It was not found footage, even though everyone's going around saying it's found footage. It's not found footage. It's shot a little bit more kind of modern cinema verite, but it's not actually just the guy running around with a camera. But I'm fine with a movie that's a horror film that's meant to be found footage or exist in that realm to not do so well. So maybe that the genre will take a break. But I mean, Men in Black opened unopposed, and everyone's like, oh, it knocked out the Avengers. I'm like, the Avengers is in its fourth week, and the Avengers made almost $37 million in the 3-day spread. That's still a shit ton of money.
Yeah, and you made that same analogy about, you always said, I believe it was The Notebook. Was that the one that knocked off Avatar? Off Avatar.
Dear John, yeah.
Or Dear John, yeah, Dear John. Yeah.
After like 10 weeks at box office number one, it knocked off Avatar. Well, yeah, because it already made like $600 million.
It was a given that the percentages always stayed pretty much the same from first weekend to second weekend to third weekend. And eventually, Avengers was going to get down to the $30 million range, $37, $35 million range. So pretty much any summer movie is going to beat it.
Well, you could have re-released the Avatar this weekend, and Chernobyl Diaries would have beat it.
Yeah, it was a given. It was going to happen, and Avengers is probably going to end up at number 3 of all time domestically. It's definitely going to be Batman.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's going to beat Titanic. It would have to have some kind of huge bump or Everything
else it'd have to have a surge. Yeah, it would have to really have a surge. And it's not like they can go and reconvert it to
3D.
Yeah, exactly.
40?
They'll put Smell-O-Rama in it. You can smell Swarma and you can smell Captain America's 70-year-old stank.
Well, every time the every time the Hulk like screams, you just have this burst of air come through the...
Yeah, nasty. You can smell the Hulk farts. I actually thought of that once. That was one of my questions I threw out on Twitter because I'm so intellectual. I was wondering if when the Hulk farts, does he have like Hulk farts or do they just smell like whatever Bruce Banner ate?
I don't know. Does it rip off his pants finally?
Well, yeah. Well, and then the other question is what if he's got a Hulk fart brewing and he de-Hulks? Does it just like rip his ass off?
I never gave it that much thought. But I don't do the fart jokes very much, as we have already discussed. But no, I mean, no, I never really actually thought about that. Maybe they'll come up in the sequel.
These are important things. Do you think that Snow White and the Huntsman is going to beat Men in Black this week? You do. How do you think it'll do?
I think Snow White will probably make. Let's see, it's a non-holiday weekend. I'm going to say 47.
But it's one of the first 47. That's a good one. But it is the first week off of school for a lot of kids.
It is, but it's not really. It's more, you know, not many people are going to go for the Chris aspect. I can't really say his last name. Thor.
Chris Hemsworth.
I'm sorry.
Thor guy.
Yeah, yeah, Thor.
Chris Hemsworth. Yeah.
Not many people are going to go for Thor. And there are people that like the Queen. Miss Theron.
Charlize Theron, yeah.
But I think all the teenage girls are going to go after the Kristen Stewart from Twilight, so they're really going to go see, you know, her. But
you think she's going to bring that over with her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more than Robert Pattinson does for his other bombs. Because I think more girls want to be closer to Kristen Stewart from Twilight than Robert Pattinson. They may think Robert is cute or the underage Jacob for the most part of the series was cute. But I think they're really going for Kristen Stewart. So I'm going to say 47, as low as 37, but it is going to beat Men in Black 3. And actually, Men in Black 3 might actually go down to third place and Avengers might stay at number 2.
That's possible. I mean, I can see Men in Black have a huge drop this week, but again, there's the Snow White doesn't offer a whole lot of competition to it. I think you're right. I think this is going to appeal to the Twilight crowd, but I'll be curious to see whether Kristen Stewart translates outside of Twilight, because she hasn't done a big release outside of Twilight in ever. Really, because all of her releases outside of Twilight have been smaller independent films. This one's a big one, so we'll see. I think you might be a little high with that one. I think you're taught maybe 40 million. It's good for maybe 40 million-ish.
Yeah, I'm talking myself out of it. I'm now thinking more 37, but I still think there's a lot of advertisement for it, and everybody's going to think it's a lot of action until they hear this podcast.
That's right, for the 18 people who listen to the podcast, hey, they know.
No, there's more people. You are in the top 200 in other countries.
In the top 200 in Ireland and in the top 3 in Kenya. I think we're now bumped down to number 4 in Kenya. God knows what bumped us off.
Well, you're insulting their continent.
No, Merrill was insulting their continent.
Well, you didn't want to go there, remember, because it was too hot.
Well, that's not insulting. I don't want to go to where you live in Arizona. I don't want to go where...
It is cold here. Actually, they say it's actually going to get cooler this weekend. It's going to have a cool trend. We're going to be 104 on Saturday after 110 on Friday.
I want to move to Canada. I just don't like hockey. What am I going to do?
We forgot Piranha 3D. That's going to take $50 million in its 75 screens.
That's going to take $50. It's not going to do well. It's going to tank. I will be surprised if Piranha 3DD actually makes it in the top 10.
I'm surprised they even made it. Seriously, not even a direct-to-video. Not even a direct-to-video. I'm surprised they made it because the first one made, what, $25 million? And
first one did not do well, no.
No, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it, but it only made $25 million.
It was one of the movies that was in the rash of people. It was right after they raised the ticket prices on 3D, and I think there was a lot of people that were like, fuck that, I'm just going to wait till it comes to video. I think that had more to do with harming Piranha's box office was the fact that it was in 3D. Not that it was in 3D, but that it was that it cost too much to go see. People didn't want to spend an extra $5.
That was one of the very few movies that I actually went out on Friday night and saw it. I usually go Saturday morning for the $5 matinee, or Sunday morning even. I'll even put it off till Sunday. But that was one of the few. I went Friday night after work. And I literally, I think I bought my ticket in advance because I was thinking it was just going to be one of those small hits that just
oh, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, and there was five other people in the theater on the opening night. Awesome. Five other people. I'm like, okay, well.
Yeah. We'll see.
Hey, you know, the Blu-ray was, I cost like $39 and I wanted to buy it so bad, but I don't spend that much money on Blu-rays. And it was like $39. I'm like, why is it so expensive? Then I found it for $5 someplace else. The $5 one was because it was non 3D.
Oh, it was a 3D Blu-ray?
Yeah, and I'm
If you don't have a 3D TV, it's not going to do you a hell of a lot of good.
Yeah, I don't have a 3D TV, and I didn't think the 3D was all that amazing.
Well, in 3D at home, home 3D is a little bit different. Because 3D in a movie theater, the screen fills up so much of your vision, and all you're going to do, hopefully, in a movie is just watch the movie. You're not going to be like doing dishes or, you know, cleaning the house or checking email and that kind of stuff. I do that shit all the time at home while I watch movies. So watching in 3D is kind of almost a chore at times. It's cool to have and it's neat, but, you know, and the 3D was impressive for what it was, but I don't think that it was worth buying the $40 Blu-ray.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't worth it that much, but the $5 one was, and still get to enjoy the movie.
I got the DVD was sent to me for review and I kept it. I loved it. I found that movie a lot of fun. Anyways, let's move on. We got an email here from Thomas from Seattle that we want to respond to, and I'm just going to paraphrase a lot of it because he asked a couple questions. Basically, one of the things he says is that there was somebody who was reading online. He's not going to name, and the person had said that. He had never watched a Hitchcock movie, but he was happy to say that The Avengers was one of the best movies of all time. And basically, Thomas is asking, is the lack of appreciation for movies that were more than just a couple years old, does that bother us? You know, it's like, you know, The Dark Knight is such a great film, but can you really say that The Dark Knight's better than some movies from the 40s? Because some movies from the 40s are really fantastic. They're just not The Dark Knight because of the technology and the time. And then, of course, he goes, great job to you and all the guys who contribute to the Fat Guys podcast, like Merrill and Hash. Thanks, Merrill and Hash. So anyways, what do you think? Do you think that it's fair to heap praise on something? And take your own personal disagreements on whether you think The Avengers is one of the best movies of all time or The Dark Knight or whatever. But do you think that it's fair to say that and ignore movies of the past that just, I guess, can't compete necessarily?
Well, I wouldn't say that they can't compete. I actually was listening to you in the question, and I was trying to think of where it was going and how to answer it. But the way I see it is every single movie is an individual. I could watch Casablanca and come up with an opinion, and this is why I felt this is a really good movie, despite the fact that it's over 40 or 50 or 60 years old now.
70
years old. 70 years. Well, I was right. It's over those number of years.
It is over that. Yeah, you are right. I'm correcting you, and $1 you're not wrong.
Price is Right.
$1. Did you throw it out Price is Right? We're going to play Plinko next.
I love Plinko. Or Plinko, or whatever it was called.
Plinko.
Anyway. I see every movie as individual. So whether or not you appreciate the classics, and it's always good to introduce someone to a fantastic movie that was made, like Psycho is in my top 10 or top 20 favorite movies of all time. But if someone really chooses just to stay relevant and stay within the last 10, 15 years, and that's all they want to watch, it's not necessarily fair. It's their choice. It's a good idea for them to see classics like Hitchcock and Psycho is one of them, or The Birds, which I mentioned to you earlier. I love that movie. But each movie is individual. I can't say that The Avengers is one of, I could say literally if I felt that way, The Avengers is the best movie I've ever seen. But that would be just my opinion, and that's because it had every element I liked in a movie in that. But that doesn't mean Casablanca is anything different or any less. Yeah. If I make any sense.
I think there's your average person walking around the street going to see movies, renting movies for their own pleasure. They can say whatever they want to. But I think if you are going to be a critic, if you are going to be speaking with a certain level of authority in the marketplace, I think you owe yourself the due diligence to actually have a bit of knowledge about a cinema. Agreed. You don't have to have seen everything. I mean, there's a lot of classics I haven't seen. There's modern classics that I haven't seen. But when I'm given the opportunity, for example, like I mentioned, Gone with the Wind, I sit down and watch Gone with the Wind. It's worth seeing to see how movies were and understand how movies were made in the 30s, for example, with Gone with the Wind, or Casablanca in the 40s, or Psycho in 1960. That's a 52-year-old movie, and it still holds up. And I would go as far to say that Psycho is one of the scariest movies ever made, you know, because it worked for what it was. So I don't know. I think it does bother me when you have people who like people who won't watch a black and white movie. I mean, like my son Ben doesn't want to see a black and white movie, but he's 8.
Okay, well, the hell does he know? If you put it in perspective of like a critic or someone that's yearning to be a critic, like a fake critic like myself, that I just it was semi pro.
You're a faux critic.
Faux critic. That actually does it. I actually do take, you know, those things in consideration. I do want to see as many as I just saw Blade Runner for the very first time, and next month will be 30 years old. I try to be diversified, but if I felt that his example was just somebody, like you said, take someone off the street, and they just really want to just watch color movies.
Well, no, he said it was basically a film blogger who said he never watched Alfred Hitchcock. I think if you're going to speak with any sort of level of authority, you actually have to have a certain knowledge beyond it. Like, you don't have to see everything that Hitchcock's. I don't think you need to see everything that Hitchcock has done, but Hitchcock did a lot of freaking movies. And if you haven't never seen a Hitchcock movie, you're really showing a lack of perspective.
No,
for yourself.
I completely agree with that. I definitely agree with that. And you really should be more open-minded, or at least study them, because there's a lot of movies I haven't seen. Like, I've never seen a Shirley Temple movie.
No.
It was just 2 years ago that I saw my very first John Wayne movie.
Yeah.
And after all these years, I've been doing this for over watching movies really closely for over 20 years, and it just now got my first John Wayne movie. But I did try to diversify myself. And yes, if you're going to speak and call yourself a movie blogger or call yourself in the industry, yeah, you really should diversify and see different aspects than just saying Adventures is the best movie I've ever seen, hands down, period. You can't change my mind about that.
Well, and I think also it's one of those things that it can take time to enrich yourself with the movies. One of the things I love about my job is I am often sent movies that are vintage films that are new to DVD or new to Blu-ray. A great example is I recently got Universal is celebrating its 100th anniversary, so they're doing a whole bunch of Blu-rays to celebrate the 100th anniversary, and I've received some of them. Now, some of them are relatively recent, like Aaron Brockovich, which is only, a dozen years old or so. I just watched that again, and it's a great movie. But I was also sent Pillow Talk, which is a fun little romp of a comedy with Doris Day and, was it Rock Hudson, I think, is in it? And I never would have sat down and watched Pillow Talk. I know MGM just recently released some Hitchcock movies. They did Notorious and Spellbound and Rebecca. They released those, and that was neat to see. And they also released The Apartment, which was a fantastic little film that I probably would have never seen. I've seen so many films that I should have seen that I just never got around to, and it gives me the excuse to do it. I remember a couple of years ago, I got like Breakfast at Tiffany's and Sunset Boulevard, and while I'm not a big fan of Sunset Boulevard, I didn't like the movie, I'm glad I saw it. You know,
yeah.
Dr. Zhivago, same thing. Not a big fan, I am glad I watched Dr. Zhivago because it's a significant film. Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, The Treasure of Sierra Madre, Maltese Falcon, all these movies that have just kind of that had escaped me over the years, it's nice to be able to, you know, start compiling them and actually watching them. So when one of those comes across my desk, I'm like, yes, I'm going to sit down and watch The Sting, because I haven't seen it since I was a little kid.
Oh, you're making me want to go out and watch a lot of these movies. I loved a lot of those that you mentioned. I never have, actually, I have not seen The Sting or the sequel.
Oh, not. I don't know if the sequel's any good.
I don't know.
I just watch Smokey and the Bandit, which is hardly an esoteric film, but it's a classic, and it's damn near 40 years old.
Well, yeah. How do you, by the way, with my example of John Wayne, mm-hmm. I'm not a big Western fan. Yeah. But you know what? You put a Western in front of me, I will actually finally watch it, and I usually end up enjoying it. Like Open Range, I loved. Dance with the Wolves, I loved. I did like Wyatt Earp. I'm one of the few people that liked Wyatt Earp over the other Tombstone.
It's a little long.
But I can't just flat out say I hate Westerns because if I haven't diversified myself, if I hadn't actually gone out and seen it, but weirdly enough, the John Wayne movie that I was recommended to see first was not one of his Westerns. It was the Irish one.
Which one's that?
He played an Irishman and he came back. He moved out of
played an Irishman who talked like this.
Yeah, it wasn't even a Western. He left Ireland and went to the United States, and then he had to come back to Ireland. And
I'm not
Quiet Man. That one.
Oh, okay, Quiet Man. Okay,
yeah, that was recommended, and it wasn't even a Western. But
you
should
see True Grit. Watch the original True Grit. That's a good movie.
I saw the remake.
The original's it's worth seeing, especially to compare. It's a good movie.
What?
Go watch it now. Come back and tell me now.
Okay, yeah. Pause.
No, I mean, I think if you're going to be an expert, if you're just a person watching movies, I think the general we're kind of in agreement. If you're just somebody watching movies, I don't give a shit. You know, if you don't want to see black and white movies, don't see black and white movies. You know, you're doing this on your free time and you're doing what you like to see. If you're going to have some sort of level of authority, if you're going to be a film blogger and you're going to call yourself an expert or ironically be like, well, I'm not really an expert, but I want you to read my blog anyways. You should see stuff, and it's going to take some time to fill those gaps, but at least strive to do it, you know, and even if that means getting current releases of old films, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. And you don't have to do the whole collection. Just to get some recommendations and
I haven't seen all of Hitchcock's stuff.
Oh no, I've only actually seen about four.
He's done a lot.
I know he's done a lot more than that. I've seen Psycho, Birds, North by Northwest.
North by Northwest, Vertigo.
And Vertigo.
Man Who Knew Too Much. Frenzy, Family Plot. Family Plot was his last one. Not good at all. I don't even think I made it through that one. So yeah. Trouble with Harry, hilarious movie.
No, I haven't seen that one. But I loved North by Northwest. That's one of my all-time favorite adventures movies. Mm-hmm. And I love Cary Grant, and it's a fantastic movie.
Cary Grant's great. You know, there's another one that I recently saw that was a Cary Grant film was Charade. That was another one that was coming out from Universal, re-released. And that was great. Sullivan's Travels, My Man Godfrey. These are some great films that, you know, if you ever really want to enrich yourself, just go to Wikipedia and search the AFI Top 100 and just start there. Mm-hmm. You know, start going through those movies. Or go through the Academy Awards and look at all the ones that were nominated for Best Picture. And just start working backwards. Mm-hmm. And some are going to be really obscure. But, you know, you're at least going to get something that somebody's going to consider good in lists like that. So anyways, let's talk about more great films with the Fat Guy 5. This is in honor of Piranha 3DD, and it is 5 great animal attack movies. And we're not just talking about, you know, when somebody's chipmunks bites their balls and is put on YouTube. We're talking about actual honest-to-God movies based on animal attacks. You can take the first one there, Steve.
Okay. Jaws. One of the absolute best movies. It's in my top 10, and that's a solid in my top 10 favorite movies of all time. Worked on every level. Score for cinematography to acting. They made the entire town a character. Everything. But yeah, but when animal attack movies, it's got to be the above and beyond the best one.
Yeah, Jaws is the first bona fide blockbuster. I think it was the first big, huge moneymaker at the time. And it made the career of Steven Spielberg. The other thing that's neat about it is if you watch it now, it holds up. I mean, and you'll get a chance to watch it in like October. I think it's coming out on Blu-ray in October in the Universal's 100-year celebration. It still works. You watch it, the shark looks faker than ever because shark or movie technology has gotten so much better. But still, even as plastic and goofy as the shark is, that's a damn fantastic movie.
Oh yeah. And the nice thing is that because of a budget and filming, they're not going to show. They didn't actually show the shark that much.
Not much at all. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I see. Yeah, not much at all.
Yeah. Well, they tried to avoid the budget. and the shark kept sinking.
They were going way over budget, and it was that the shark was just malfunctioning all the time for everything.
What was his name, Betsy or Betty?
Bruce? Wasn't it Bruce?
Bruce the shark. Bruce? Yeah, Bruce the shark. But it was a fantastic movie. The acting was great. The dialogue was great. But that's just above and beyond a masterpiece, in my opinion.
Yep. The next one on the list is the predecessor to Piranha 3DD. And that is Piranha 3D, which is the remake of the Joe Dante classic. If you've seen the Joe Dante original Piranha, it's not that good. It's a Roger Corman film from the 80s that's trying to just rip off of Jaws' fame. Mm-hmm. This Piranha movie, we'll breeze through this really quick, but it's just good bloody fun. It's just awful and horrible and just completely ridiculous and over the top.
Yeah,
and fun.
That's why I loved it. It was completely and utterly honest.
And boobs.
And boobs, yeah, that's exactly why I liked it.
Well, you know.
But it had every element that in it, it just was completely open with you. It's going to be a B-movie, it's going to have boobs, it's going to have gay jokes, it's going to have nudity, violence, gore.
It's going to have fish eating a penis.
Yeah, a 3D penis. Yes. And it's going to have comedy, and it's going to have music, and it's going to have a cheesy story. And
it's going to have Elizabeth Shue as the serious sheriff. What?
Oh.
So awesome.
She was great. No, I had so much fun, and it was relentless. It didn't stop with the attacks. It didn't make you wait 40 minutes into the movie for the first attack. It gave you attack right away, which no spoiler, was a fantastic first attack because of the history.
Yep.
Not naming names, but we already did.
You can. It's a 2-year-old movie if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Statue of Limitations. It was Matt from Jaws. It was actually Matt Richard Dreyfuss playing basically the same character, but not the same name, but close enough.
No, it was his name. I think he was credited as Mr. Hooper.
Oh, was it Mr. Hooper? Yeah, this is the final resting place of Richard Dreyfuss from the first movie, who never returned to the Jaws sequels for a good reason.
Yeah, exactly. The next one on the list is, speaking of Alfred Hitchcock, is The Birds. Which here's what's interesting about The Birds. What I loved about The Birds is there is no explanation.
Precisely.
And that's what makes it so chilling. When Showtime did a Birds 2 sequel, and they like, well, let's put this environmental message on it. And, you know, I'm all for saving the environment, but let's not get preachy, and it just ruined the story. Well, partly it was a Showtime original movie, so there you go. And from the 90s. What's great about The Birds with Alfred Hitchcock is there's no explanation. It's just the birds just start freaking out. And that's scary, because that's what would happen in the real world. And plus, the effects are so fantastic for its time. And yeah, they're not Avengers-level special effects, but then again, they were made 50 years ago.
Well, that was my point when I was trying to answer the question, and I actually did it wrong at first, but that was my point. It was every movie's individual. I can't compare this movie to Avengers, even though the time span. This movie itself, for the time, for what they could do, yeah, the special effects were great, and Alfred Hitchcock did a fantastic job of not just throwing the birds at us right away. There was a very deep story with great dialogue and great acting, and then finally the
birds
show up.
And no music.
And music?
There's no music in The Birds.
There isn't. I forgot about that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no Bernard Herrmann score.
Yep. Yeah, it is devoid of soundtrack, which is and what's funny is another one we mentioned, No Country for Old Men. I actually was campaigning for No Country for Old Men to win the best soundtrack award. in my local critic organization. Now, if you remember that movie, it has only one music cue in the entire film. And it's when they come to the motel.
Yes.
And find the carnage. Everything else, no soundtrack. And people were like, what? And I'm like, look, the choice to not use a soundtrack is as important as it is to pick a proper soundtrack.
Actually, correct. But you really have to have a good director. You really have to have a good director to pull off that kind of mood.
Yeah.
And not just have the pacing problems. Doing.
You can't throw in the guy who directed Snow White and the Huntsman and give him a no soundtrack role, because it would be terrible. The next one is Creepshow. In particular, the fifth segment, which is They're Creeping Up on You with E.G. Marshall as a fastidious OCD germaphobe who was attacked by cockroaches in his super clean apartment. Yeah. Got bugs, Mr. Pratt.
That segment was cut from the TV version before we had cable.
What?
Yeah, they well, you know how they edit.
Fucking
edit
communists! Movies. What's going on?
They cut the entire segment out. I kind of remembered when I was a kid. I kind of remembered that segment, the bugs, and I wanted to see that. And then the fourth segment ended, and the credits rolled, or the Creepshow guy came out and did his comic book thing, and the boy got revenge with the. Feed Me, See More plant. But
that was the second one.
What?
The plant was Creepshow
2. Oh, was it part 2? Yeah. Well, they still had the cartoon with the...
Yeah, yeah, it was a voodoo doll with his dad.
The voodoo doll, okay. Well, they just cut it, and that was the end of the TV one. I'm like, oh, that's the one I wanted to see, because that creeped me out the most with the bugs. And I know there was a story behind it, but as a kid, the it was just scary with all those bugs.
We got an infestation of oriental cockroaches. If you don't know, your cockroaches, there's several different types that manifest in America. I know people in Kenya and Ireland are listening to this, but in America we have the American cockroach, which is the big, long, brown, sort of mahogany looking one with the wings, which is the very common. And the German cockroaches, and those are like 2 inches long. German cockroaches are very small. They're about less than an inch long. And they kind of look like a miniaturized lighter version of the American cockroach. Then there's the black cockroaches, which are the oriental cockroaches. They're also known as water bugs. And they're dark black. They're wider and fatter. And they are ugly motherfuckers. And they're probably about an inch and a half long. And we had those in our basement. And you walk downstairs, you turn on the light, and poof. It was the most horrifying thing ever. I hated cockroaches.
Were they as
and
big
then
as,
I saw this movie.
Temple of Doom?
No. Actually, I actually got over my fear of them by having Madagascar hissing cockroaches as pets in college.
Really?
Which are those big fat ones. So whenever, and they're actually herbivores, those cockroaches. So they're very clean because they don't lie in filth. They're jungle bugs basically. But I had some of them and they'd hiss. You pick them up, they go tss, really cool. So,
well, that part was scary.
You're like, no, now I feel like things are crawling on me.
Well, that's not the next things, one. The next one is.
Yeah. Well, this is a theme on this last one. So you give yours and I'll give mine.
Oh, I get to go first?
Yes.
Good. There's actually two of them, but like I said, a tie. The most is Eight-Legged Freaks, which was filmed here in Arizona, as was Piranha 3D. But actually, right down the street from where I live right now, Eight-Legged Freaks was filmed about a mile away.
Oh, wow.
It used to be an old Valley West Mall movie theater, or old Valley West Mall turned into another mall. Then they tore that down and put up a Walmart, of course. But before they tore it down, that mall that they show is supposed to be a small town in somewhere in Arizona was actually the mall right down the street from me. But even though it was kind of really over the top, it was... Actually, not as over the top, I don't think, as Piranha 3D, but it's been many years since I've seen Eight-Legged Freaks.
Yeah.
It still freaked me out. I mean, spiders above all other bugs creep me out the most, and especially once you can see the hair on the back. Or like, yeah, there's only one creature I want to see hair on. And, hey, we're in the middle segment.
We're in the middle segment.
Yeah, we haven't even got Ranji yet.
No, we haven't. We're actually been pretty clean.
Yeah.
Shame on you. What are you doing? You're You're failing at the raunchiness.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fuck that.
All right.
There we go. Rated R. Just like a few good men. Anyway, that movie kind of freaked me out, but mostly the spiders that were under the ground and grab people, which I know, I guess, it are true real-life spiders. There's
well, they're not that
scale.
Big.
Because they were doing ostriches, and it was really funny how the ostriches kept getting pulled underneath, and they made this squawk.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that movie scared me. And also had what, the former Mr. Courtney Cox?
David Arquette, yeah, he was in it.
Yeah, he was in that.
He's only two-legged, though. My eight-legged terrifying movie is Arachnophobia, which is just a fun little, I believe it's directed by Joe Dante, and it was in 1990 or so. Lots of fun, just a great, good old-fashioned throwback to the scary monster bug movie, and that's fun. And I hear it's coming to Blu-ray pretty soon, so that'll be good to see.
I have to revisit it. I haven't seen it since 1990 in the theaters.
I'm afraid it's not going to hold up because some of the 90 movies I've watched recently haven't, so we'll see. The honorable mention is The Prophecy, not the one with Christopher Walken and the angels and God and all that kind of stuff. This is the one with the mutant bear in the woods of like upstate New York. And it starts like Armand Asante's in it playing a Native American, even though he's like Italian or something like that. But he plays a Native American. And I think, is it Richard Mazur, I think, maybe, is the guy fighting the giant mutant bear.
This is all you. I've never seen this movie. I've seen the poster for it. But
if you've not seen The Prophecy, Talia Shire's in it, I think. Rocky's wife. If you have not seen The Prophecy, go check it out.
Well, if it's black and white, I won't see it.
No, it's not in black and white. It's in color. Full bloody color. So, with that, I think we better go to a break. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We had an interesting discussion, actually relatively clean discussion, so I don't know what your problem is, Steve. But in the last segment, we had a very interesting discussion. We talked a little bit about classic films and becoming an expert on films and that sort of thing. We also did a Fat Guy 5 about animal attack movies in honor of Piranha 3DD. We also talked about box office and Will Smith and whether his ears are going to take him to a new reigning champion as a king of box office. Wow, I'm getting loopy now. I am falling apart. What do we have coming up next here?
Well, I believe it's the world-famous DVD Roundup.
Whoops, I didn't have that volume up. See, I'm completely out. There we go. That's better. Anyways, thank you. You want to do the first one here? You got one that you've seen.
Okay, I have seen Man. You actually wrote down Man on Ledge. Isn't it Man on the Ledge? Or
it is Man on Ledge. That was my just caveman version. Man on Ledge. Damn, more dainty.
I liked it, and I know it's. I know it wasn't a very popular movie. I liked it. It was fun. No. It was exactly what you think it's going to be. It's a man on a ledge with a very, 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 very old Ed Harris in it, who's actually getting sunken in on this movie.
What's going on? I was more interested in looking at Genesis Rodriguez in her underwear.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
Oh.
She looks great.
I missed that part.
Sam Worthington was in his underwear, though.
No. Too bad.
This is one of his movies where he wasn't half naked thrown out.
I know. He wasn't running around gladiator style. It was fun. It's a leave your brain at the door. Literally, you have to leave your brain at the door. And some of the scenes were actually...
You literally have to. They cut your brain out and they put it in a... the movie theater.
You have to go get it on the ledge afterward if you don't jump.
Brain on the ledge. It was good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was decent. It's one that I would suggest. Other ones are Goon, which is, if you like hockey, it's about a guy who becomes an enforcer on a hockey team who basically gets in fights. That's his job, is to protect the players and get in fights. Played by Sean William Scott, and it's got a lot of heart. For as violent and as bloody as it is, it has a lot of heart. Speaking of violent movies, we need to talk about Kevin, which was a fantastic film.
Yeah, you
from
would say
last
that.
Year. Yeah, well, not just because my name's in the title, but it's a brilliant movie, and it's told in this sort of this stream of consciousness, a non-chronologically told story about a woman who raises a demon, horrible child who does some awful things. And Tilda Swinton stars in it. It kind of got snubbed during award season. Totally deserved more credit than it got. That's on DVD and Blu-ray. Gone with Amanda Seyfried tracking down her missing sister. Completely ridiculous film, but a lot of fun. I enjoyed it because it's just so gosh darn ridiculous at times. Coriolanus, which is a Shakespeare adaptation of a film, which is, it's tough because it's, you know, long drawn out Shakespearean dialogue in sort of an Eastern European militaristic setting. And then finally, Love Never Dies, which is a sequel to Phantom of the Opera, which is Andrew Lloyd Webber's sequel. And it is on DVD and Blu-ray. It's the Melbourne production. So if you want to check that out, you can. The Blu-ray looks fantastic. I mean, the set design's great. Kind of like Snow White and the Huntsman, but there's a little bit lacking in terms of story. So.
Sounds good. I do want to see the Kevin movie. I've been so wanting good. To see it since it came out.
Yeah, it's been sort of like piddling through limited release, but now it's on Blu-ray and DVD, so you can check it out.
Yeah, I loved her and Michael Clayton.
Yeah, yeah. That, she won an Oscar for that one.
Yeah, she did. She only won.
Stinker of the week is Royal Pain Season 3. I hate this show. Concierge doctors in the Hamptons. Just dealing with rich, stupid people. So basically a reality show with a real script this time. Finally, we've got the review wrap-up. Snow White and the Huntsman, I said, kind of sucks.
I give it a preemptive suck.
Preemptive suck, because they didn't show you. Show it to you, you silly people.
We don't get anything in Phoenix, really.
Nah, no. Except heat. There's Piranha 3DD. With Piranha 3DD, which we gave a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to us. There's also Battlefield America, which is a sort of a step-up kind of movie, dance movie. It has nothing to do with Battleship. And For Greater Glory, which is Andy Garcia in Spain during a civil war, I believe. And those, neither of those were screened. Those are opening this week, so you can check those out. But like I said, Snow White and Piranha 3DD, give a chance to give a little bit of a nod to. Finally, next week, we've got Madagascar 3. Europe's Most Wanted, and Prometheus, which is a movie. I'm one of my highly anticipated films of the summer. Steve, you got about a minute. Tell us where we can find you, where people can get in touch with you, where they can stalk you, all that good stuff.
Well, you won't find me on Twitter. I'm very rarely on there. I'm a lot on Facebook, but the majority you'll find me is on my website, is thesar3000.com. That's thesar3000.com. Based on the MST3K.
Yay!
Yeah. And then you can shoot me a message there. My email address is all over that website, and hopefully you'll enjoy what I have to put on there.
Awesome.
Thank
you
so
much. Hey, you know, Steve, thank you so much for being on the show. It was great to have you on for the last couple second reel episodes we had, and it's good to have you on Fat Guys Proper. So we are definitely, you know, going to see if we can get you on again. It's a lot of fun. We hope everybody enjoys the movies. Hope everybody goes and enjoys, you know, another dose of Will Smith, and then get rid of him and go see Snow White with a ridiculous premise of Charlie's Throne being uglier.
Don't forget to give Will a kiss goodbye.
That's right. Give him a kiss. You'll get slapped in the face. Thank you, guys.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Merrill. Celluloid Spotlight with Merrill and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.